scores of Palestinians are killed and the latest Israeli strikes in different parts of the Gaza Strip, amid warnings of acute hunger in the besieged enclave. Yemen's Ansarullah Resistance Movement says transit to the Red Sea is safe for all vessels except for Israeli ships. And a funeral procession is held in Tehran for senior Iranian military advisor in Syria, Brigadier General Said Razi Mousavi, who was assassinated by Israel on Monday. This is news. Thanks for joining us. The Israeli regime launches fresh air raids on the Gaza Strip, killing scores of Palestinians. At least 30 people were killed in an Israeli air raid on a residential building in the city of Beit Lahia in the northern Gaza Strip. Israeli strikes left two journalists dead in the northern part of the Palestinian territory. At least 17 people were killed in Israeli strikes against the city of Deir al-Balah and the Nusayrat refugee camp in the central Gaza Strip. The regime's shelling of al-Maghazi refugee camp left 7 people dead. More than 30 were killed in airstrikes in residential buildings in the southern city of Khan Yunis. The attacks came as the World Health Organization warned of acute hunger and severe risk of diseases in the besieged territory.
Today, I repeat my call on the international community to take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing the population of Gaza and jeopardizing the ability of humanitarian workers to help people with terrible injuries, acute hunger, and at severe risk of disease.
The WHO chief also warned that the population of Gaza is in, quote, grave peril. The world body says its ability to supply medicines, medical supplies, and fuel to hospitals is increasingly constrained by the hunger and desperation of people en route to and within hospitals. More than 21,300 people, mostly women and children, have been killed since the start of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza on October the 7th. At least 106 journalists have lost their lives in the strikes. According to UN figures, an estimated 1.9 million Gazans have also been displaced since then. Earlier, our correspondent in Gaza, Moti Abu Musaba, told us more about the situation in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Israeli airstrikes are still continued, waged by the Israeli warplanes against several areas of Gaza Strip, particularly the central area of Gaza Strip, where several residential buildings were totally demolished over the continuous those airstrikes in Al Burj refugee camp, in Al-Zawaida village, and in Al-Sawarha village as well. We are talking about continuous airstrikes targeting the Palestinian civilian areas and the residential buildings, knowing that those buildings are totally crowded with the evacuees who totally fled their houses and their neighborhoods and the Gaza City and the northern parts of Gaza Strip into the central area at the beginning of this onslaught. In the same context, it was noticed by the people that the Israeli occupation forces scaled up the use of the Israeli fighter drones against civilian people here in the central area of Gaza Strip, where in the Al-Maghazi refugee camp and Al Burj refugee camp, dozens of the Palestinian civilians were attacked, and they have been brought to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here in the central area of Gaza Strip after the Israeli occupation war drones targeted them as they were gathering and walking around in the streets of those camps. So we are talking about continuous airstrikes and continuous attacks of the Israeli fighter drones.
Well, our correspondent in Gaza has interviewed the victims of Israel's indiscriminate attacks on the besieged territory. They have given horrific eyewitness accounts of the ordeal that they have gone through. Let's take a listen.
Around 30 individuals, mostly women and children, from the evacuees were inside the house when it was attacked by the Israeli missiles. A huge explosion took place that left all of us wounded or killed. Our neighbor's house was leveled to the ground as well, and the people inside the house were massacred. We were all civilians, and we went to that house after our original house was destroyed 2 weeks ago, leaving my brother killed.
We were all civilians residing in our house. All of a sudden, a massive explosion took place. We didn't know what happened. A couple of hours later, I was pulled out from the rubble along with my wife and my daughter. We suffered severe injuries. I was devastated when I was informed that 15 people of my family members were killed then. Many of them were under the rubble. I don't know for what reason we were targeted.
I was sleeping in my house with my family. A shocking explosion took place. I didn't know what happened. I woke up in the hospital and I found my leg was amputated, and I found three of my grandsons were killed. Our residential square was completely destroyed. We are suffering. We don't even get the needed medical care. We don't know when this nightmare will end.
I was originally living in Tal Awa neighborhood in Gaza City. I moved about several houses in Gaza along with my family over the heavy bombardment. We came to the central area under the demands of the Israeli army that claimed the area would be safe. While we were in the house with my relatives, several Israeli missiles pummeled the house. I was the only survivor out of the 23 individuals in the house. We didn't commit any crime. We were all civilians.
I was inside our house. Suddenly, multiple explosions took place and targeted several houses in our square. I didn't know what happened. I found myself in the hospital. They told me that 30 of my neighbors were massacred, and some of them are still under the rubble, and it is pretty difficult to get them out. These massacres must stop. We are all civilians. We didn't do anything.
Israel ramps up its deadly raids across the occupied West Bank, while at the same time pressing ahead with its genocidal war on Gaza. In their fresh attack, the regime forces targeted the city of Ramallah, killing one Palestinian and injuring at least 15 others. Nine Palestinians were also injured during a separate raid on the town of Al-Hul near the city of Al-Khalil. Regime forces abducted two Palestinians there. One person was also reportedly injured in an Israeli attack in the northern city of Nablus. Israeli forces have raided the city of Jenin and its refugee camp as well. Apart from raiding homes, occupation forces this time stormed Palestinians' money exchange shops, taking possession of about $2.5 million after detaining their owners. Regime forces and settlers have killed at least 314 Palestinians and abducted hundreds more in the West Bank since October the 7th, the day when Israel launched its bloody onslaught on Gaza. The Ramallah correspondent Mona Kandil joined us earlier with more details about the latest Israeli raids across the occupied Ramallah.
In the occupied city of Ramallah, during this military raid, Palestinians clashed with Israeli forces who, of course, used live fire and bullets against the Palestinians. They killed one Palestinian, Hazem Qatawi, and 14 others had been wounded. The Palestinians said that at least one journalist is among those who had been wounded, and they confirmed that they had seen an Israeli soldier had been wounded in the exchange of fire, and he was transferred by the Israeli forces in the city of Ramallah. The Israeli troops had raided Bitunia. At least one Palestinian had been wounded, as you have said, in the city of Halhoun in Al-Khalil during the operation that meant to storm the money exchange shop. At least nine Palestinians had been wounded as well. In Jenin and its refugee camp, the Israeli forces carried out a raid. In the last few weeks, we can see that almost every 2 to 3 weeks, Israeli forces raid Jenin and its refugee camp. At the same time, the Israeli military declared that they had carried out a drone strike in Jenin refugee camp, and it seems that a number of Palestinians had been wounded. In addition to this, today we received that one Palestinian succumbed to his injuries that he sustained almost 2 weeks ago.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has called for an end to Israel's violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank.
I call on Israel to take immediate, clear, and effective steps to put an end to settler violence against the Palestinian population, to investigate all incidents of violence by settlers and Israeli security forces.
Turk underscored the worsening safety conditions the Palestinians in the West Bank and occupied Al-Quds have been subjected to since October 7. He stressed the need to protect the Palestinians from Israeli troops and settlers alike. UN officials said that it was, quote, very disturbing to see the Palestinians dehumanized through the treatment by Israeli settlers. Around 300 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied West Bank since Israel's genocide in Gaza started. Some 5,000 people have also been abducted, regularly accompanied by physical, psychological, and sexual abuse. Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement says the U.S. has failed to instill the impression to the world that the Red Sea is unsafe. Until the spokesman Mohammed Abdel Salam said the international lines in the Red Arab Seas are safe and stable. He said that hundreds of ships pass through the Red Sea every day. He said the coalition formed by the U.S.'s presence in the Red Sea only to support Israeli ships. He said that Yemen has repeatedly stated that only Israel-linked ships are targeted. Regarding the non-participation of some countries like Spain, France, and Italy in the American coalition, he said these countries know that their ships cross the Red Sea safely every day. The Yemeni official said Sana'a will continue attacks against the interests of the Israeli regime, regardless of whether the U.S. coalition is formed or not. Iran's foreign minister says the hegemonic line the U.S. follows makes its government no longer capable of imposing decisions. Hossein Amir Abdollahian said Washington's hegemonic power worldwide is dwindling day by day. The top diplomat made the remarks in an address to the 13th National Meeting of the Qom Seminary Teachers Community. Amir Abdollahian said that U.S. officials are now expressing frustration over their unconditional support for Israel, as its defeat is now considered America's defeat. He also said that Tel Aviv and Washington are attempting to spread Gaza onslaught to other parts of the region. Thousands of Iranians from all walks of life have attended the funeral ceremony of the assassinated senior military advisor, Brigadier General Seyed Razi Mousavi, in the Iranian capital, Tehran. More in this report.
After the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, led the funeral prayer for the assassinated senior military advisor, Brigadier General Seyed Razi Mousavi, thousands of Iranians from all walks of life gathered in Tehran's iconic Imam Hussein Square to bid farewell to the general killed in an Israeli airstrike. Senior military commanders and government officials also attended the funeral ceremony. Addressing the participants, the chief commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Hossein Salami, praised Mousavi's role in the axis of resistance and fighting terrorism in the region. He also warned Tel Aviv that Iran will take revenge for the assassination of the late general.
The Zionists are under so much pressure that they were forced to assassinate Seyed Razi. But here I declare that we will never stay silent about the martyrdom of the children of this nation. Our revenge is always tough, and our revenge for the assassination of Seyed Razi is nothing short of wiping off the Israeli regime from the face of the earth.
Salami described General Mousavi as a loyal companion of late Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Salami also hailed the Palestinians' Al-Aqsa flood operation, saying it was a response to decades of Israeli crimes.
The Al-Aqsa flood was a purely Palestinian operation designed and executed by Palestinians themselves. No groups outside of Palestine were involved in this successful operation. The Al-Aqsa flood was a Palestinian response to more than 70 years of Israeli occupation and crimes.
Participants in the funeral procession carried flags and chanted anti-Israel and U.S. slogans. They hailed efforts by figures such as General Mousavi and Soleimani, saying they have sacrificed their lives to bring peace and stability to the region.
I have attended this funeral ceremony to thank a martyr who fought for our peace and security. This is our duty to be here.
We're here to stand against oppression. And we're saying this to Israel. You think killing one Iranian will literally compensate your loss in Palestine? No way, no way. The more you kill from us, the more we will become awake, the more we stand up.
Brigadier General Seyed Razi Mousavi's body was buried in the Imamzadeh Saleh Shrine in northern Tehran, with a throng of mourners saying goodbye to this veteran and influential commander in the resistance front. General Mousavi served in Syria as a military advisor and was martyred on Monday in a terrorist attack by the Israeli regime on the capital, Damascus.
Today, the Iranian nation has sent a strong message to Israel. That is, no matter what the occupying regime does, they will remain steadfast in supporting the resistance. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
The Islamic Resistance Movement in Iraq says that it has conducted a missile strike on an Israeli military base in Syria's Conoco gas field. In the statement, the resistance group said the attack was in response to the Israeli massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. The statement also stressed the group's commitment to releasing or resisting U.S. occupation forces in Iraq. Earlier today, Iraqi resistance groups struck the technical and spying center of the Israeli regime in the northeast of the city of Erbil, using appropriate weapons. Since the beginning of Israel's onslaught on Gaza, resistance factions have carried out a number of such attacks in response to the regime's massacre of Palestinians. U.S. military bases and facilities in Syria and Iraq have also come under repeated attacks over the past months in response to Washington's support for Israel. Syria has complained to the UN after Israel assassinated an Iranian military advisor in Damascus with an aerial strike on Monday. The Syrian Foreign Ministry has sent two identical letters to the UN Secretary General and the Security Council highlighting the Israeli violation. The ministry says the Arab country is committed to its inalienable right to defend its sovereignty. It further says this Israeli brutality is part of the occupying regime's attempt to expand and to escalate its aggression in the region and to cover up war crimes, genocide committed against Palestinians. The letters say that Israeli acts will not deter Damascus from combating terrorism that is backed and funded by the regime and its sponsors. Syria also called on the UN to help end the Israeli aggressions that threaten to ignite a regional war. The Turkish president has lashed out at Israel over the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza and the destruction of the besieged territory. Recep Tayyip Erdogan says that there is no difference between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Nazi Germany's leader Adolf Hitler.
It's been 80 days since the attacks began. All the values of humanity have been shot in front of our eyes. We've watched Israel's Nazi camps in their stadiums, didn't we? What kind of work is this? They used to talk about Hitler strangely. How are you any different from Hitler? This will make us look for Hitler. Are Netanyahu's actions any different from Hitler's? Hitler was not as rich as this one. This one is richer than Hitler. All kind of support is coming from the West and the USA. They killed more than 20,000 Gazans.
He made the comments while addressing a ceremony in the capital, Ankara. Erdogan also criticized the West's support for Israel, stressing that Western countries backing Israel are complicit in the regime's war crimes. He added that Turkey is ready to welcome academics and scientists who face persecution due to their views on the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Erdogan had previously called Netanyahu the butcher of Gaza, accusing him of actions bordering genocide. He's also described Israel as a terrorist entity, calling for Netanyahu to be prosecuted by an international war crimes tribunal. With that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. This is bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. When it comes to nominating contests, more than half of U.S. Democrats and Republicans said they were not confident their party would choose a candidate who could win the 2024 presidential election. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Associated Press has covered this story and tells us more. According to a new survey, a possible rematch between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump is not exciting the American public. The Associated Press NORC Research Center poll published recently found that 56% of U.S. adults overall, regardless of party affiliation, would be very or somewhat dissatisfied with Biden as a Democratic presidential nominee. On the other side, about 58% said the same thing about Donald Trump being the potential GOP nominee. About 3 in 10 U.S. adults, or 28%, said they would be dissatisfied with both Donald Trump and Joe Biden becoming the nominee, with independents, 43%, more likely than Democrats, 28%, or Republicans, 20%, to express displeasure with both politicians clinching to their party nominations. However, pollsters found more Republicans are more satisfied with Donald Trump leading the ticket than Democrats are satisfied with Joe Biden leading their ticket. Almost half, or 49% of Democrats, said they would be very or somewhat satisfied with the incumbent as their party's nominee, while 65% of Republicans said the same thing about the former president, Donald Trump. When it comes to the nominating contest, less than half of Democrats and Republicans said they were confident their party would choose a candidate who could win the general election in November. The poll found about 29% of Democrats said they are very or extremely confident their party will choose a winning nominee, while 33% of Republicans said the same. Negativity around the 2024 election doesn't appear to be limited to the presidential candidates either. Roughly 68% of those surveyed said they are pessimistic about the state of politics in the United States as a whole. Republicans are more pessimistic than Democrats that their party's primary votes will be accurately counted, with about 37% saying they have a great deal of confidence. A majority of Democrats, 72%, said the same thing about their party. Opinion polls' findings come as Donald Trump and Joe Biden appear to be on their way to clinching their party's nominations, just weeks before the primary season kicks off with the Iowa caucus. Donald Trump has maintained a strong lead in the polls since announcing his re-election bid, despite facing four criminal inducements and a civil fraud trial in New York. While Democrats don't appear enthused about Joe Biden as their prospective nominee, his primary challengers have struggled to gain significant momentum. According to a new survey, Donald Trump is leading President Biden in seven swing states, dealing the latest blow to Biden's re-election campaign just weeks ahead of the start of the primary voting season. The opinion poll published recently from Morning Consult and Bloomberg News Agency found Joe Biden is trailing the former President Donald Trump by an average of 5.28 percentage points in the seven swing states surveyed. The states of North Carolina, Georgia, Wisconsin, Nevada, Michigan, Arizona, and Pennsylvania. Donald Trump held his strongest lead over Joe Biden in North Carolina with 11 percentage points, followed by Georgia, 7%. The former president is leading in Wisconsin by 6% and in Nevada by 5%, according to the pollsters. His smallest leads are in Michigan and Arizona, leading by 4% and 3% respectively. The results are from a hypothetical ballot that includes party frontrunners, Biden and Trump, as well as third-party candidates like Robert Kennedy Jr., Corwell West, and Jill Stein. There was also an option for participants to choose an unlisted candidate or answer "don't know, no opinion," or choose to forgo voting altogether. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had support from roughly 1 in 10 voters across the swing states, while 1% to 2% of voters in each state supported Colonel West. 1% to 3% of voters supported Jill Stein, and 1% to 3% supported a candidate not on the ballot. Pollsters said when the third-party candidates are taken off the ballot, Donald Trump continues to lead Joe Biden in all seven swing states, though Georgia's race comes within a margin of error of 6 percentage points. The survey also found that Donald Trump secured more support from respondents when looking at the economy. However, when it comes to the issue of health care, Joe Biden has a slight lead over the former president in five of the swing states, namely Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. According to the survey, Donald Trump still leads on the issue in Georgia and North Carolina. British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump is extending his lead over U.S. President Joe Biden as the contours of next year's presidential election come into focus. Trump may face legal jeopardy as he battles a string of court cases, but he now leads Joe Biden by 4 percentage points in the latest Daily Mail J.L. Putnam's opinion poll. The results show the former president winning over independent voters, while Joe Biden has seen his support fall within his own party and among women. The numbers will reignite debate about whether or not Biden, 81 years old, can generate enough excitement around Democrats to make good on his promise that he is the best candidate to beat Donald Trump, 77 years old. And it comes after a separate Daily Mail opinion poll showed he was losing to Donald Trump in 2 out of 3 key battleground states. To look at the overall national picture, J.L. Putnam surveyed 984 likely voters using landline and cell phone calls, as well as SMS messages and smartphone apps. When asked who they would vote for if the election were tomorrow, 40% of respondents picked Donald Trump, and 36% of respondents chose Joe Biden. Independents Robert Kennedy Jr. and Cornel West won 4% and 1% respectively, while Green candidate Jill Stein's share was around 0%. That leaves a lot to play for. Some 18% said they were still undecided or wanted a different candidate. And the poll went into the field before Colorado's Supreme Court added another twist, disqualifying the former President Donald Trump from the state's Republican primary. Even so, James Johnson, the co-founder of JL Partners, claimed that Donald Trump was on the up and up. He said, "Voters might think that Trump is guilty of the charges that have been put to him, including a sizable chunk of Republicans, but his record in his first term in office means he is still attracting support." James Johnson added, "But look closer and it becomes clear that Donald Trump's lead is more because of Biden's weakness than Trump's strength. Biden has taken a particular hit among 18 to 29-year-old women and suffers from low enthusiasm among black people too. There is also a big chunk of undecideds, 1 in 10 of Biden's 2020 voters who might not like Biden but can't bring themselves to vote for Donald Trump. Biden has struggled with questions about his age and voters continue to say that they're worried about the economy under his stewardship. In contrast, Donald Trump seems not to have suffered from indictments in 4 criminal cases during the past year. Whether a conviction would finally strip away his non-stick coating remains to be seen.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri wa salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Mahdi Rastani.
When you look at the verses of the Quran, you find out that from the very beginning, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is placing this idea of maintaining your family ties
very high up on his lists. If he were to give you a priority list in terms of practicing your faith, maintaining your family ties is very high on this list. It's not a 20, number 20, number 30 on this priority list. Because when we look in the verses of the Quran and verse number 36 from surah number 4, surah An-Nisa, you find Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks to us in this way. He says, the first promise I have taken from you is that you will not associate anyone else with me as your Lord. You will not do this thing that we refer to as shirk. Number one. وَاعْبُدُ اللَّهَ وَلَا تُشْرِكُ بِهِ شَيْئًا. That's number one. Number two, the thing that comes up immediately afterwards are the people who are around you and your relatives. The first in line, of course, are the parents, وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا, and afterwards immediately comes what? The rest of your relatives. وَبِذِي الْقُرْبَى وَالْيَتَامَى وَالْمَسَاكِينَ. And the verse continues. This ذَوِي الْقُرْبَى, so closely mentioned to this concept of shirk and staying away from it. Again, verse 83 of Surah Al-Baqarah, you find very similar wording. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He is describing for us that covenant and that promise He took from Bani Israel. Those things that Bani Israel were supposed to make sure that they do. He says, we took this covenant, لا تعبدون إلا الله, that they would not worship anyone except for Allah, and that they would do what? وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا وَبِذِي الْقُرْبَى, and that they would remember their family ties. Multiple times in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions this. And you can tell, this is a concept that is very high on the priority list of Islam and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So much so, that the first verse of Surah An-Nisa, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says something that the Imam draws attention to in his hadith. The verse says, وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ الَّذِي تَسَاءَلُونَ بِهِ وَالْأَرْحَامِ. Be considerate of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and your arham. And the sixth imam in a hadith, he says, look at this verse of the Quran. Look at how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala made the arham a qareen for himself. Look at how he put himself beside the arham. He said, be considerate of me, remember me and your arham. The sixth imam says, this shows you the arham, they play a very critical role. This is the importance of maintaining these family ties. Then you move on to the reward. The reward is also kind of out of this world. If you think about it, you find that there are many rewards given to the one who simply maintains his family ties. And the hadith of the Imam, Imam al-Baqir says, إِنَّ أَعْجَلَ الْخَيْرِ ثَوَابًا صِلَةُ الرَّحِمِ. Amongst those deeds that you will see its impact in your life immediately is صِلَةُ الرَّحِمِ. The deeds that we do are of two types. Some of them you do, the effect of it will show itself mainly in the next world. A little bit in this world as well, but maybe you have to wait 10 years, 15 years, 20 years to see the effect of it. Then there are deeds that you do that have an immediately worldly effect. Immediately impacts your life. The fifth imam says, Salatul Rahim is one of those. Amongst the others of them is kindness to parents that's mentioned in hadith. That you will see the impact of it in this life. Not only in the next world, but also in this world. So what is this reward? What is this effect of Silatul Rahim? What happens to me, for example, if I just shoot a text to my cousin, for example, or I check up on my aunt or my uncle, for example? What happens in my life? What type of impact does it really have on me? The hadith of Imam al-Baqir continues. On another occasion, he's mentioned this. He says there are five effects for the one who maintains his family ties. He says, number one, the first effect of this, tuzakkil amal, the person who maintains his family ties, his acts of worship are purified. His act of worship may have not been done with the most pure of intentions. Yes? Not that he's doing riya. No, not that. But his intentions might have this shirk khafi involved in it. He says, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, tuzakkil a'mal. Because of this, he purifies his deeds. Amongst those benefits, number two, watunmil amwal. I mean, I don't know who's not going to like this one. It increases your rizq and increases your sustenance. Why? Because you did salatul rahim. And he moves on, watadfa'u al-balwa, and it removes the bala from you. Removes the calamity that could possibly happen to you. Number four, وَتُيَسِّرُ الْحِسَابِ, and it eases the judgment in يَوْمُ الْقِيَامَةِ. And وَتُنْسِي فِي الْأَجَلِ, and it prolongs the life of the human being. And this last effect of Silatul Rahim is something that is mentioned over and over again in hadith. Multiple hadith speak of this idea, that the one who does Silatul Rahim, the one who maintains his family ties, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala prolongs his life. This is where a beautiful hadith of Imam al-Sadiq, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi, recite a salawat please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ajin farajam. Comes into the picture where Imam al-Sadiq is explaining to his companion. He says, Ma na'alamu shay'an yazidu fil umri illa silatul rahim. He says, there's almost nothing I know out there that can prolong your life more than what? Than Salatul Rahim. This is a big claim that the Imam is making, yes? And then he explains it very beautifully. He says, sometimes you will look at a person. This person, if you knew when his life was supposed to come to an end, you would see that the decree is that he has to leave this world in 3 years. But because he is a person who does Salatul Rahim, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala extends his life to 30 years. And then he says, sometimes you will see a person, it is written for him to die in 30 years. But because he cuts off these family ties, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala takes his life in 3 years. 30 and 3. And very beautifully, on another occasion, the hadith says, the companions of the Imam were sitting in a circle. And the idea of visiting your relatives and maintaining these ties had come up. And when it came up very beautifully, the sixth Imam turned to one of his companions who was part of the circle. His name was Muyassir. Just put yourself in this atmosphere. Put yourself in the place of Muyassir. Imam Sadiq turned towards him. He said, Ya Muyassir, قَدْ حَضَرَ أَجَلُكَ غَيْرُ مَرَّةٍ. The time of your death had come multiple times. But you're only alive and breathing because you did Salatul Rahim. Imagine the goosebumps you get when the sixth Imam points at you and says, listen, you weren't supposed to even be here. You're only here because you did this Salatul Rahim. Now one might ask, how does this work though? This correlation, I don't know. I send someone a message. I give salams to someone and somehow my health, for example, does not worsen with my age and I live longer. This correlation may not necessarily make sense to us. And that's not a problem. We live in a materialistic world. And these are secrets that Ahlul Bayt and Islam is sharing with us, that there is a correlation between these two. You do this, your sustenance will increase. How exactly does this work? That's the whole beauty of it. These are the secrets that we don't know of and that they share with us. But somehow, some way, there is a correlation between the two. Your life and a little bit of a visit that you grant to someone. A little bit of a checkup that you do for someone from some of your relatives. This is on this hand. Then when it comes to the one who cuts off these family ties, the tone that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has used is very harsh. Very harsh. And when you go through these lines of Quran and hadith, of course you have to ask yourself, what type of effect does this play in society? That Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala cares so much that I maintain these family ties. This is a valid question. Why is it so important for him? Because when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts reward for something, he never does so just, abruptly. Doesn't just choose something and say, well, I like recitation of Quran. This is going to have a lot of reward. No, it has an impact in your life.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi عليم حال حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على
محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
History did not begin on October 7th. What took place that day followed more than 75 years of Zionist settler colonialism, and it was triggered by the unbearable conditions in Gaza amid the Zionist regime's 16-year siege and imprisonment of more than 2 million people in the territory. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, on October 7th, the armed wing of Hamas resistance movement, Al-Qassam Brigades, breached the high-tech militarized barrier that the Zionist regime has used to imprison Palestinians in Gaza for more than 16 years. The armed group ransacked military bases and briefly seized control of several settlements. In the hours and days that followed, the Zionist regime's Western allies and leading media organizations were quick to call the attack unprovoked, aiming to justify an Israeli regime response that has already killed more than 16,000 Palestinians across Gaza and the occupied West Bank. The October 7th attack was indeed unprecedented, but to call it unprovoked reflects a deliberate attempt to obscure the fact that the Zionist regime created the violent conditions that rendered a violent response inevitable. Today, nearly 2 months into the Gaza massacre, the Zionist regime forces are killing and maiming yet another generation of Palestinians and provoking the next cycle of violence. History did not begin on October 7th. What took place that day followed more than 75 years of Zionist settler colonialism, and it was triggered by the unbearable conditions in Gaza amid the Zionist regime's 16-year siege and imprisonment of more than 2 million people in the territory. Most of Gaza's residents are the descendants of refugees who were forced to flee their homes across Palestine in 1948 in the face of rampaging Zionist militias. Gaza came under Egyptian control until 1967, when the fabricated regime of Israel invaded and seized the territory. The grip of Israeli occupation tightened with each year that followed, isolating Gaza's inhabitants from the rest of Palestine and the world. In the face of relentless Palestinian resistance, the Zionist regime withdrew from Gaza in 2005, only to impose a suffocating siege that has continued ever since. The truth is, the Zionist regime's occupation of Gaza never ended. It merely transformed. Today, Gaza is often described as the world's largest open-air prison. But even this description fails to do justice to the extent of Israel's brutality. What the Zionist regime is doing in Gaza is far worse. It is a project solely dedicated to the collective punishment of an entire population that has dared to resist. With more than 2.3 million people packed into an area of about 365 square kilometers and enclosed behind a high-security electronic fence and concrete wall, Gaza is one of the most densely populated places on Earth. The Zionist regime's blockade looms over just about every aspect of life for Palestinians in Gaza. The Israeli regime controls who enters and exits the Gaza Strip with an archaic permit system routinely used as leverage over the entire population. Surrounded by Israel and Egypt, most Palestinians in Gaza have never been allowed to leave the enclave. The fabricated regime of Israel even controls its airspace and territorial waters. The blockade has devastated Gaza's economy and prompted what the United Nations has termed de-development, a situation in which development is not merely impeded, but actively reversed. This has left nearly half of the population unemployed, with the rate exceeding 70% among youth. For many Palestinians in Gaza, life is a struggle for survival. Between 2007 and 2010, the Zionist regime's authorities maintained a calorie count of Palestinians' nutritional requirements to ensure that they only received the bare minimum of food to avoid starvation. And in just the first 6 months of 2023, nearly 400 children in Gaza were denied permits to go to the occupied West Bank for urgent health care. As if the blockade wasn't enough, the Zionist regime carried out protracted military onslaughts against Gaza in 2008 to 2009, 2012, 2014, and 2021, killing thousands of people and exacerbating already dire living conditions by crippling the territory's infrastructure. Homes, schools, and hospitals have been destroyed, while attempts to rebuild have been hampered by the Zionist regime's refusal to allow construction materials, such as steel and cement, into Gaza. In 2014, the Zionist regime targeted Gaza's sole power plant, aggravating an energy crisis that persists to this day, with an average of only 13 hours of electricity a day. While the physical carnage caused by the Zionist regime's brutal assaults has been extensively documented, far less attention has been given to the human toll and the psychological devastation wrought upon an entire generation. An 18-year-old in Gaza is now living through their fifth major Israeli regime assault. They have seen friends and family massacred by Israeli regime missiles, artillery shells, and sniper rounds. Meanwhile, 9 out of 10 children in Gaza suffer from debilitating conflict-related trauma. With children accounting for around half of Gaza's population, the future for many is bleak. The torture of Gaza, however, is only part of the story. Under the direct protection of the Zionist regime's military and with explicit encouragement from Israel's far-right leaders, Zionist settlers have carried out deadly programs in Palestinian towns such as Hawara. In recent months, entire communities between Ramallah and Ariha have been cleared out by Zionist settler violence. Even before October 7th, 2023 was shaping up to be the deadliest year for Palestinians since the UN started tracking fatalities in 2006. Across historic Palestine, the fabricated regime of Israel has been tightening its occupation and basking in the glow of impunity. Now, by remaining silent as the Israeli regime renders Gaza unlivable, the international community is condemning Palestinians to a hopeless future. Those lucky enough to survive Israel's unprecedented assault have nowhere to go. The Zionist regime's military has laid waste to much of northern Gaza, destroying half of the buildings and obliterating entire neighborhoods. Gaza's already overburdened critical infrastructure has been shattered, and after forcing hundreds of thousands of civilians to flee northern Gaza, the Israeli regime is now gearing up to turn its attention to the south. By allowing the Israeli regime to get away with genocide, the international community is complicit in creating a new crisis that will make the pre-7 October status quo pale in comparison.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance field. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. This revolution was able to remove the dependent, corrupt system that was ruling the country and establish a new system and a new voice in its place, the Islamic Republic. Republic means democracy. Islamic means religion. Religious democracy was a new term in the world. We have had religious governments throughout history, but there was no talk of democracy in them. We have had democratic governments, real or fictitious, but there was no talk of religion in them. Never before had there been a government or a system in which religion and this world and the hereafter, and people and God were all involved and were the builders of it.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
But such a thing happened, and they wanted to crush it, overcome it, and eliminate the Islamic Republic. This was their target. And this has remained their target up until today. They come up with all different types of excuses. But as to those who are against the Islamic Republic, are opposing it, and are hostile toward it, their problem is with the Islamic Republic. Other marginal issues are of less importance. This is their main issue, and it was back then as well. Of course, there was a wicked, greedy person such as Saddam in the midst of this who was far removed from any aspect of human decency. He had another goal as well, which was to destroy the Islamic Republic, to invade and assault the country's territorial integrity, to take the oil-rich regions of the country, and to divide the country. These were his goals. But the other parties didn't care much about these things. Their main concern was that the Islamic Republic. There is a big difference between a war that takes place with the aim of changing a part of the border between two countries and a war that takes place to destroy the thing that constitutes the identity of a nation.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.